A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Welcome to my weird prompts. So Daniel sent us this one. He's noticing the thing every job hunter hits eventually. You find a vacancy, you tick maybe 80% of the boxes, but those last few requirements stop you cold. You don't apply. Meanwhile, someone else with no hesitation oversells their expertise and gets the interview. Daniel's asking, is there actual data on how recruiters react to partial matches? And how should candidates navigate specs that look like a fantasy wish list without missing genuine opportunities? There's a lot to unpack here.
There really is. And the core tension here is something I've been thinking about for a while. It's the gap between how candidates read a job spec and how the people who wrote it actually intend it. We're talking about a fundamental asymmetry in interpretation.
Because one party treats the document as a contract, and the other treats it as a mood board.
A mood board with bullet points. And the data on this is actually kind of stunning. Let me start with the piece that I think names the whole problem. Harvard Business Review published a study back in 2024 looking at what they called the gender application gap. The finding was that women tend to apply only when they meet 100% of the listed requirements. Men apply when they meet about 60%.
So men are treating the spec as a conversation opener, and women are treating it as a locked gate.
The downstream effect is systemic. If you're a company with a 10-point requirement list, your applicant pool is going to skew male, not because fewer qualified women exist, but because qualified women are self-selecting out at a much higher rate. The spec itself becomes a bias mechanism, even if nobody intended it that way.
Which is the quiet tragedy of being conscientious. The people most likely to respect your time and not waste it are the ones you never hear from.
That's the 80% problem Daniel's describing. He's basically in the conscientious camp, doesn't want to be a nuisance, doesn't want to clutter someone's inbox, but let me give you the number that should reframe this entirely. Greenhouse, the hiring platform, did a survey in 2025. They found that 68% of recruiters say they would consider a candidate who meets 70% of the requirements, 68%. But here's the kicker, only 22% of candidates believe that.
There's a 46-point perception gap between what recruiters say they'll do and what applicants think they'll do.
That gap is where all the missed opportunities live. That's the space where good candidates never apply and companies never see them.
All right, walk me through the psychology here. Why do candidates treat these specs as so rigid?
I think there are two forces at work, and they push in opposite directions depending on who you are. On the under-applier side, the Daniel side, you've got imposter syndrome and conscientiousness combining into something that looks ethical but is actually self-defeating. You don't want to waste anyone's time. You don't want to be caught out. You don't want to be the person who exaggerated. On the overseller side, you've got the Dunning-Kruger effect in full bloom. The people least qualified are often the most confident about their qualifications because they don't know what they don't know.
The honest people self-select out, and the deluded self-select in. That's a terrible filtering mechanism.
It's the worst filtering mechanism. It's the opposite of what a hiring process should do. And I want to be clear, this isn't just me speculating. There's a 2024 study from the Journal of Applied Psychology that tracked what happened to people who exaggerated on their applications versus those who did what they called honest but optimistic framing. The exaggerators, people who actually claimed skills they didn't have, were 4 times more likely to be fired within the first 90 days.
You can bluff your way into a job, but you can't bluff your way through the job.
But here's what's interesting. The people who did honest but optimistic framing, where they acknowledged gaps but presented their experience in the best possible light, had no negative outcomes. They weren't fired at higher rates. Their performance reviews were fine. Everything was normal. The distinction is between lying and framing, and the data says those are completely different things with completely different outcomes.
The ethical concern. Am I being dishonest by applying when I don't meet every requirement? That concern might be misfiring. The dishonesty that actually causes problems is fabrication, not omission.
And I think this is where we need to talk about what recruiters actually do with these applications. Because the popular image is that your resume goes into an applicant tracking system, and if you don't hit enough keywords, a robot rejects you before any human sees it.
Which is the nightmare scenario everyone's afraid of.
It's mostly wrong. Most ATS systems are configured to flag partial matches, not reject them. They'll surface candidates who hit, say, 6 out of 10 keywords, and human recruiters routinely override the automated filters. The average recruiter spends about 7.4 seconds scanning a resume on the first pass. That's it. The cost of reviewing an extra application is negligible. You're not burdening anyone.
7.4 seconds. So the ethical weight I'm placing on not applying, the whole I don't want to waste their time thing, I'm protecting them from something that costs less than 8 seconds.
You're being more considerate of their time than they are. And I get it. I really do. There's something admirable about not wanting to impose. But let me give you a data point that puts this in perspective. LinkedIn did a big analysis in 2025. They looked at jobs that listed 10 or more required skills versus jobs that listed 5 to 7. The jobs with the longer requirement lists got 47% fewer applications.
The laundry list works as a deterrent. Companies are getting exactly what they asked for, fewer applicants.
Here's the twist. The applicants who did apply to those 10-plus skill jobs were 2.3 times more likely to be hired than applicants to the shorter list jobs. The spec is filtering, but it's filtering in a way that benefits the people who ignore it.
The spec isn't a barrier. It's a bluff that only works on people who take it seriously.
That's one way to put it. Another way is that the spec is a wish list and the company knows it's a wish list, but the candidate doesn't. And this brings us to the recruiter's perspective, which I think is the piece most job seekers never hear. Let me give you a concrete example. Indeed did an analysis in 2025 of 50,000 software engineer job postings. They found that 83% listed 5-plus years of React as a requirement. But only 12% of those roles actually required React on a daily basis. The rest used it occasionally alongside other frameworks.
The requirement was functionally a nice-to-have, dressed up as a must-have.
That pattern repeats across industries. A senior product manager role at a Series B startup listed 14 requirements. The person they hired met 6 of them. 6 out of 14. But they had strong adjacent experience in the same industry vertical, and that turned out to matter more than any individual bullet point.
This is making me think about the companies themselves. Why are they writing specs like this? Is it incompetence, or is there a strategy here?
I think it's a mix of things, and none of them are particularly flattering to the companies. Robert Half did a survey in 2026, so very recent, and found that 71% of hiring managers admit they overshoot requirements to discourage unqualified applicants.
They're using the spec as a filter, not as a description of the job.
But 44% of those same hiring managers said it backfires by scaring off ideal candidates. So they know the strategy is flawed, and they keep doing it anyway.
That's the corporate equivalent of putting up a beware of dog sign when you don't own a dog, and then wondering why the delivery guy won't come to the door.
The dog sign keeps getting bigger. The Burning Glass Institute has been tracking what they call a requirements inflation index. For entry-level roles, the average number of listed requirements has grown from 4.2 in 2019 to 7.8 in 2026.
For entry-level jobs.
Jobs that by definition are for people just starting out, and we're asking them to have 7 or 8 distinct competencies before they've even had a chance to develop them. It's absurd on its face.
It's not just the number of requirements. It's where they come from. I've heard from people in hiring that a lot of these specs aren't written by the hiring manager at all. They're copied from competitor postings, or assembled by HR people who don't fully understand the technical needs of the role.
That's absolutely right. And this is one of the misconceptions I really want to bust. The idea that job requirements are carefully curated minimum standards, that's just not how it works in practice. Many of these lists are Frankenstein documents. A line from a competitor's posting here, something the last person in the role happened to know there, a skill someone in a meeting thought would be nice to have. None of it is calibrated.
The candidate is treating the document with more respect than the people who wrote it did.
And once you internalize that, the whole dynamic shifts. You stop seeing the spec as a test you have to pass and start seeing it as a conversation someone is trying to have, badly.
All right, let me push on something. Because I can hear a listener saying, okay, fine, the spec is inflated, but I still have to get past the screening process. And if I'm missing things that are on the list, won't I just get filtered out before anyone reads my application?
That's the fear, and it's reasonable. But let me give you some data that complicates it. There was an experiment run in 2025 by a hiring platform called Applied. They focus on bias reduction in hiring. What they did was strip all requirements from a set of job postings and anonymize the applications. No listed skills, no years of experience, just the actual work samples and structured interviews.
They removed the laundry list entirely.
Applications increased 3 times, and the quality of hired candidates, measured by 6-month performance reviews, improved by 22%.
The requirements weren't just failing to identify good candidates. They were actively preventing good candidates from being found.
That's the implication. The spec was a net negative for hiring quality. And I think this connects to something deeper about what actually predicts success in a role. The Society for Human Resource Management did a study in 2025 and found that 62% of hiring failures were due to cultural or communication mismatches, not technical skill gaps. The things that cause people to fail in jobs are mostly not on the job spec.
Because you can't bullet point fits in with the team or knows when to shut up in a meeting.
You can't. And those are often the things that actually matter. So you end up with this bizarre situation where companies are filtering for things that don't predict success and ignoring things that do. And candidates are twisting themselves in knots trying to match a list that was never a good predictor in the first place.
What does a candidate actually do with this information? Because knowing the system is broken doesn't help you navigate it. It just makes you more frustrated.
Let's get practical. I want to offer a framework that I think helps cut through this. I'm calling it the 3-bucket method. You look at a job spec and you sort every requirement into 1 of 3 categories. Bucket 1 is hard stops. These are legal or regulatory must-haves. You need a medical license to practice medicine. You need a bar certification to practice law. You need a security clearance for certain government roles. These are genuinely non-negotiable, and if you don't have them, you shouldn't apply.
That's the small bucket.
It should be the small bucket. If a spec has 10 hard stops, the company doesn't understand its own requirements. Bucket 2 is core competencies. These are skills you could reasonably acquire within 3 months on the job. If you've used Python, but the spec asks for Python plus a specific library you haven't touched, that's a bucket 2 item. You can learn it. This is the company's wish list, the things they'd love to have but don't actually need. 5+ years of React when the role uses React occasionally. Experience with a tool that won't even be relevant in 6 months. These are nice-to-haves that got promoted to requirements because someone was typing and got carried away.
The candidate's job is to be honest about which bucket each requirement falls into, and then make a judgment call based on the distribution.
Here's the rule of thumb that the data supports. If you meet 70% of the listed requirements, counting only bucket 1 and bucket 2 items, and you can credibly demonstrate an ability to learn the rest within 90 days, you should apply. That's the 70% rule, and it's backed by that greenhouse data showing 68% of recruiters agree with that threshold.
That's a lot lower than what most conscientious people are comfortable with.
And I want to address the ethical discomfort directly, because I think this is where a lot of people get stuck. There's a Career Builder survey from 2026. 58% of recruiters said they view applications with partial qualifications as ambitious, not deceptive. They see it as a positive signal. Someone who's willing to stretch is someone who's motivated.
31% said it's wasting their time.
And I don't want to dismiss that. But let's do the math. If nearly 6 in 10 recruiters view your application positively, and 3 in 10 view it negatively, and the cost of sending it is basically zero, you're talking about a strongly positive expected value. And remember, the recruiter who views it negatively spent 7 seconds on it and moved on. You haven't harmed them.
The asymmetry of harm is important here. The candidate's downside is non-existent. The upside is potentially career-changing.
I think this is where the ethical reframe needs to happen. You're not wasting their time, you're giving them data. Every application is a signal about what the talent pool actually looks like. If companies only see applications from people who meet 100% of their inflated requirements, they never learn that their requirements are inflated. The conscientious non-applicants are actually enabling bad job specs.
That's a provocative way to put it. By not applying, you're reinforcing the very problem that's keeping you from applying.
You're part of the negative feedback loop. The company posts an unrealistic spec. Conscientious people don't apply. The only applicants are the oversellers and the deluded. The company concludes that good candidates are hard to find, and they double down on the spec. Rinse and repeat.
Applying with partial qualifications is almost a civic duty. You're correcting the market signal.
I wouldn't go quite that far, but I do think there's a case that the most ethical thing you can do is apply honestly but ambitiously. Not lying, not exaggerating, but not self-rejecting either.
Let's talk about the cover letter, because I know a lot of people, myself included, view cover letters as a kind of ritualized groveling that nobody reads.
I used to think that too, but there's actually some interesting data here. Ladders did a study in 2025 looking at how recruiters respond to different cover letter strategies. The finding that jumped out at me was that candidates who explicitly acknowledged their missing requirements and explained their transferable skills were 3 times more likely to get an interview than candidates who ignored the gaps.
Naming the gap works better than hoping they won't notice it.
And I think the psychology here is straightforward. When you name the gap, you're demonstrating self-awareness and honesty. You're also doing the recruiter's job for them. You're saying, here's what I don't have, and here's why it doesn't matter. That's a much stronger signal than pretending the gap doesn't exist.
It's also a way of signaling that you've actually read the spec carefully. You're not just spraying applications everywhere.
And in a world where AI-powered application tools make it trivially easy to blast out hundreds of generic applications, showing that you've actually engaged with this specific role is differentiating.
All right, let me play the skeptic for a moment. Because I can imagine a candidate hearing all this and thinking, this sounds great in theory, but I've tried applying to jobs where I met most of the requirements, and I never heard back. The system is broken, and your 70% rule doesn't fix it.
That's fair, and I want to be clear, this isn't a magic formula. Applying is necessary but not sufficient. You still need to be a competitive candidate. The 70% rule is about not self-rejecting. It's not a guarantee of an interview. But I think the deeper point is that self-rejection guarantees you won't get the job. Applying at least gives you a chance.
The data suggests the chance is real. Those LinkedIn numbers, applicants to 10-plus skill jobs were 2.3 times more likely to be hired. So the odds aren't just non-zero. They're actually better for the jobs that look harder to qualify for.
Which is counterintuitive until you think about it. If a spec scares off 47% of applicants, the pool you're competing in is much smaller. Your odds improve not because you're more qualified, but because you have less competition.
The spec is doing your competitor filtering for you.
It's the laziest competitive advantage in the world. Just show up.
We've talked about the candidate side. Let's flip it and talk about what happens when companies actually get this right or wrong. Because I think there's a signal here that candidates can use to evaluate employers, not just jobs.
This is a great point. If a job spec lists 12-plus requirements for a mid-level role, that's not just a barrier to you. It's a red flag about the company's hiring maturity.
What does that signal tell you?
It says a few things. It says the hiring manager probably hasn't thought carefully about what the role actually requires. It says HR may have inserted themselves into the process in a way that prioritizes checklist, matching over judgment. And it says the company may have unrealistic expectations about what one person can do, which is going to be your problem if you get the job.
The spec is a preview of the culture.
It's the company's dating profile. And if their profile says they want someone who's 6'5", earns 7 figures, and also does their own stunts, you know you're dealing with someone who's not serious.
Or someone who's going to be impossible to please.
And I think candidates should use this as a filter. If you see a spec that looks like it was written by a committee that couldn't agree on anything and just included everything, that's information. It's not just about whether you qualify, it's about whether you want to work there.
There's a concept I've been turning over while you've been talking. You mentioned signal detection theory earlier, and I think that's exactly the right framework. Candidates are treating job specs as high-threshold signals. The bar is set high, and if you don't clear it perfectly, you're rejected. But recruiters are treating them as low-threshold signals. The bar is low, and clearing it just means let's talk. The two sides are playing completely different games.
That's the whole problem in one sentence, and the mismatch creates all the downstream dysfunction. The conscientious candidate sees a spec with 15 requirements, assumes the threshold is 15, and walks away. The recruiter sees the same spec, assumes the threshold is maybe 8 or 9, and wonders why nobody good is applying.
The overseller sees the same spec, assumes the threshold is 3, and fires off an application. So the recruiter's inbox is full of oversellers, while the honest candidates have already left the building.
It's a market for lemons, applied to hiring. The information asymmetry drives out the quality participants.
What breaks the cycle? Is there any evidence that companies are getting better at this?
There are some encouraging signs. The skills-based hiring movement is real. Companies like Google, IBM, and Apple have dropped degree requirements for about 60% of their roles. The idea is to focus on what you can do rather than what credentials you've accumulated. That naturally reduces the laundry list problem because you're not padding the spec with proxy qualifications.
We're not there yet.
We're not there yet, and there's a complicating factor that I think is going to make this worse before it gets better. AI-powered resume screening is now ubiquitous. About 70% of large employers are using it in 2026. And early data suggests these tools penalize partial matches more harshly than human recruiters do.
The robot is less forgiving than the human.
The robot is doing exactly what the conscientious candidate feared the human would do, applying a strict keyword threshold and rejecting anything below it. Which means the perception gap we talked about earlier might actually be shrinking, but in the wrong direction. Candidates are becoming more accurate about how they'll be evaluated because the evaluation is becoming more rigid.
That's bleak.
It's not great, but I think it makes the human strategies even more important. If AI screening is the first gate, you need to be strategic about keywords without lying. Use the exact language from the spec where it honestly applies. Don't claim skills you don't have, but don't use different words for the same skill and hope the algorithm figures it out.
You're optimizing for the robot without becoming dishonest.
And the cover letter strategy becomes even more important here, because once you get past the AI screen, the human recruiter needs to understand why the gaps don't matter. The AI gets you in the door, the cover letter keeps you there.
Let's pull this together into something actionable, because I think the listener who sent this in, and probably a lot of other people, need a clear framework they can use tomorrow.
Let me lay out 4 things I think every candidate should do. First, the 70% rule. If you meet 70% of the listed requirements and can credibly learn the rest within 90 days, apply. The data supports this threshold. Second, use the cover letter to explicitly address your gaps. Don't ignore them. Name them and explain why your transferable skills make them irrelevant. The latter's data shows this triples your interview chances. Third, use the spec as a reverse signal. If a mid-level role lists 12-plus requirements, that's a red flag about the company's hiring maturity. Treat it as information about them, not just a test of you. And fourth, reframe the ethics. You're not wasting anyone's time. You're providing data to a market that desperately needs it. 58% of recruiters view partial qualification applications as ambitious, not deceptive. The people who matter are on your side.
That last point feels like the one that's hardest to internalize. Because it's not a data problem, it's an identity problem. People who pride themselves on being honest and conscientious have built an identity around not being the kind of person who wastes other people's time. Applying when you don't meet every requirement feels like a violation of that identity.
I think that's exactly right. And I think the reframe has to be that honesty and ambition are not in conflict. You can be honest about what you don't know and ambitious about what you can learn. Those things coexist. The Journal of Applied Psychology data shows that honest framing has no negative consequences. The people who get in trouble are the ones who fabricate. There's a huge ethical distance between, I have 5 years of React experience when you don't, and I don't have 5 years of React, but I've built production applications in similar frameworks, and I'm confident I could be productive in React within a month.
One of those is a lie. The other is a prediction about yourself that you're willing to be held accountable for.
Employers want people who make predictions about themselves and then deliver. That's basically what a job is.
The ethical concern, properly understood, isn't about wasting the recruiter's time. It's about making promises you can't keep. And the solution is to make promises you can keep and be clear about the boundaries.
That's the whole thing. Don't lie, don't exaggerate, but don't self-reject either. The system is already doing enough rejecting. You don't need to help it.
I want to circle back to something you mentioned earlier about the requirements inflation index. Entry-level roles going from 4 to nearly 8 requirements in 7 years. That's not a subtle trend. That's a structural change in how companies think about hiring.
I think it reflects something deeper about the economy. When companies feel uncertain, and the last few years have been nothing but uncertainty, they respond by trying to de-risk everything. Hiring becomes about finding the perfect candidate who requires zero training and zero ramp-up time. The spec becomes a fantasy document because the company is fantasizing about risk-free hiring.
Which doesn't exist.
Which has never existed. Every hire is a bet. The question is whether you're making an informed bet or a desperate one, and the inflated spec is a symptom of desperation, not rigor.
The candidate who reads the inflated spec and walks away is actually responding rationally to a signal of employer desperation. They just don't know that's what they're responding to.
And once you name it, you can respond differently. You can say, this spec is inflated, which means the company is anxious about hiring, which means they might actually be more flexible than they appear. The bluster is a sign of weakness, not strength.
The beware of dog sign on the door of a house with no dog.
And you can either walk away from the house, or you can knock and find out.
All right, let me ask you the forward-looking question. Where does this go? You mentioned AI screening making things worse in the short term. Is there a scenario where this gets better?
I think the skills-based hiring movement is the most promising countertrend. When companies stop using degrees and years of experience as proxies for ability, the incentive to inflate requirements diminishes. You don't need to list 8 skills if you're evaluating candidates based on work samples and structured interviews. The applied experiment showed that stripping requirements entirely improved outcomes. That's the direction I hope we're heading.
The AI trend pushes in the opposite direction.
And I think the next few years are going to be a tug of war between these two forces. Companies that figure out how to use AI to broaden their candidate pools rather than narrow them will have a massive competitive advantage. Companies that use AI to rigidly enforce checklist hiring will end up with homogeneous teams and surprise performance problems.
Because they'll be filtering for the wrong things at scale.
They'll be doing the wrong thing faster, which is the classic risk of automation.
For the candidate listening right now, the practical advice is, apply anyway, be honest about gaps, use the cover letter strategically, and don't mistake an inflated spec for a real barrier. But keep an eye on the structural trends, because the game is changing.
Maybe the most important thing, don't let your conscientiousness become a disadvantage. The fact that you care about not wasting people's time is a good thing. It makes you a better colleague, a better employee, a better person. But when it stops you from even starting the conversation, it's not serving you or the people you're trying to be considerate toward. They'll never know you exist if you don't apply.
Next time you see a job spec with 15 requirements, ask yourself, is this a barrier or a bluff? The data says it's usually a bluff.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In 1961, Nepal's King Mahendra was scheduled to visit China to negotiate a border treaty. But the trip was delayed by 3 weeks because a Tang Dynasty-era bureaucratic protocol document, mistakenly filed in the Chinese Foreign Ministry's active archives, listed Nepal as a tributary state, requiring the entire diplomatic framework to be rewritten before the visit could proceed.
Right.
The Tang Dynasty, reaching across 12 centuries to inconvenience a mid-century monarch. That's a commitment to paperwork.
The question we want to leave you with is this. As AI screening becomes the norm and requirements lists keep inflating, will the gap between what companies ask for and what they actually need get wider or narrower? Early signs point to wider. But that just means the advantage goes to the people who understand the game well enough to play it honestly. Don't lie. Don't self-reject. And don't mistake a wish list for a locked door. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with someone who's currently staring at a job spec and talking themselves out of applying. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore. A thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.